Ugh, she's so hot. You think if I asked nicely, she would sit on my face? God! I'm so gay! I want her feet in my mouth, man. Fuck me! Please! I want to eat her pussy out! Motherfucker!
And welcome to SoxCast episode 187, the only podcast dedicated to boofing all your favorite illicit substances. We hope that everybody's survived the heat wave. It was a killer the last couple weeks. It was not a good time. We had a string of days where you wake up every morning and the guy on the TV says heat index 115, and you know, even when you're inside in a nice, you know, air conditioned space like the ones that I am typically in, you still kind of feel that shit. Like, you could still kind of feel it radiating in the walls. It's in the air.
Yeah.
When you have to go outside, it's utter misery. So we hope everybody's survived. I know it's supposed to start getting hot again next week, unfortunately. But we had a rather pleasant week this week, thankfully.
Hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Always start a podcast with weather talk. It gets people going. Just love that. Absolutely. The immediate reaction. All right.
Interesting. How about the Mets?
How about them?
Yeah, we can talk sports.
We could talk World Cup, which I only recently started watching because I'm a soccer tourist, a football tourist.
That was actually the prize, is getting to name the sport from now on.
Yes.
For the team that wins.
Yep.
But I think we're still sticking with soccer.
Yeah. Yeah. We're just going to call it soccer. That's where it is.
Well, we definitely didn't win.
No, we didn't.
the extent to which the U.S. didn't win is we managed to find all new frontiers in losing in humiliating.
I mean, there's VTuber curses going around. It's a wild year.
We literally had our own fucking president try to interfere. And just like everything he touches turned to complete shit. The only game the Knicks lost is when he was there. It's just, come on, man. Come on. Good God.
Like losing, like playing in such a way that it's like an international incident and yeah. then losing.
And then we lost by three goals. It's so good. I fucking love it. Humiliate us more, world, because we absolutely deserve it. To my immediate virtual.
I was going to say I didn't want to do sports talk. I wanted to talk about video games and manga, but
I mean, we can make that work. I mean, people do.
We'll get to that.
Come on, man.
We'll get to it.
Yeah, God. What's your problem with sports? You got a problem with sports? Are you one of those weird nerds where when it's Super Bowl time, they're like, oh, I've never heard of it. What's the Super Bowl?
Yeah, you really got to be a weirdo nerd to have a problem with FIFA.
I mean, that's not the direction I was going here. It was more just the general nerd that tries to act like
not that kind of nerd.
No, like those are the kind of nerds that dude, just shut up. Shut up. You're not funny. It's not funny. Yes, you're a super cool nerd. Wow. We're all impressed. Go swim in your vat of pussy. To my immediate virtual right. Stick around, son. He's got a bone to stick in you. That's right.
This is the most accurate open ever.
It really is. We are just fumbling. Look, man, we're all into this on a pretty low energy. We're sorry. We didn't have a way to cold open throw into the show this time around. It's just one.
We're doing it. We're just freestyling
we
it.
We are
just
go, just push forward. Dogging this shit. We are shoving it in there as fucking unprotected as we can. And that's what you're getting. That's what you're getting.
I got my tea, so that's going to help.
There you go.
Thank you, Cecile.
I've got my Diet Pepsi. ready to go.
Oh yeah, we got our beverages. We got our poisons of choice.
There you go. My favorite poison is water. Rhett, you're ready for a podcast. I can just tell. You just got that. Got that energy about you.
You know, I did play some video games this time.
Oh my god!
Oh shit! Unlike like the last two.
Look at this. There's something to look forward to. Stick around, folks. This show's about to get wild and unpredictable. To my immediate virtual left, never mind the bollocks. It's John Thayer.
Hi there.
Hey.
I'm John.
You are John.
Rhett playing video games is actually pretty unpredictable at this point.
It actually is. Yeah. 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 Because I knew
you. Like me watching anime.
I know he recently hit anime zero, and I thought, that's weird. They jumped right back
in. And they started two new anime.
They started two new anime. They're very related, yep. You know. They're good. Yeah. We'll probably hear about them in the next.
I did hit media zero for the first time in like 3 months since the last podcast, and it felt very good.
Media zero does feel nice. There's no media obligations, and then I almost hit media zero, and then a game that I was wanting came out. So I was, that's been a lot of fun. So
that's how they get you.
That is how they get you. They do keep releasing video games despite everything. I don't know how. I don't know how long that's. I don't know how long that's gonna last, but. You know, I'm sure they'll figure it out, right? They know better. Rhett!
Hello.
I'm just in anticipation here to hear you talk about anything that's not anime, so I'm just gonna
Bad news, because I watched a really long anime. I did want to get to it. John will know that I have watched all of Dr. Stone.
This is like, okay, you've gone through My Hero Academia, you've gone through Attack on Titan, I think you watched Demon Slayer, right?
Demon Slayer's the one I dropped after season one for reals.
Okay. And then Kigetsu Taika, what's the other one?
I don't know, Jujutsu Kaisen, but that's not over
Jujutsu
yet.
Jujutsu Kaisen. Okay. You've My Hero Academia and Attack on Titan, you've gone through, you watched all of Hunter x Hunter, you've gone through the heavy hitters here, and now you're having to dig a little deeper into the pop culture. You found Dr. Stone for your shonen fix.
Yeah, so this is another show that started in 2019 and finished in 2026, along with Beastars and Fire Force. Mm-hmm. And I talked about season one of this on the podcast in 2020.
Holy shit.
2020, a very mentally stable year for everyone.
Yeah, nothing really going on there.
Yeah, it was pretty chill. I was just like, I'm going to stay inside and watch some anime, and this one kind of pissed me off. So the premise of Dr. Stone is that the entire population of the planet got petrified.
Good start. Like, good start.
I know, it's just John Divine, like, oh, yeah, just, every single person, they show it, all them people turn into stone. And then like 7,000 years pass.
Okay, with you so far.
That is the longest boner ever.
And our main character, Senku, was awake the entire time, because you can lose, once you fall asleep when you're petrified, then you just don't wake up, even though you're still technically alive. He counted the seconds the entire time. It's a good way of illustrating that this show is completely unfeasible. Like,
he wasn't counting in his sleep.
He wasn't asleep, though. He was just like, he knew what day it was because this show makes such absurd leaps of logic.
Right.
Doing that for 7,000 years would drive you insane, literally, like immediately.
Dude, you'd be done after a week. You would be done after a week.
Yeah. So the show, season one lost me. I realized I didn't actually even ever finish season one. I dropped it after like episode 17 because I'll just spoil it. There's a plot twist that broke the setting for me because it's revealed that when the Earth was petrified, there were 6 astronauts in space who avoided it. And then they landed on Earth and did fuck all nothing with the rest of their lives besides reestablish, you know, humanity. They had kids, but they didn't, for whatever reason, establish like any sort of technological like base for them to work with. So 7,000 years later, and the descendants of those humans are just like living like cavemen still. And it's just like, what the fuck are you doing? That weird. It just breaks the setting for me.
Yeah, it shattered it to rubble.
Yeah. So the other thing I didn't like about season one when I originally watched it was like, oh, there's just so much fighting in this show. I want there to be a lot more science because that's the what you thought the premise of the show
doctor,
was going
to
be.
Doctor!
Is that Senku, not only just surviving 7,000 years by staying awake and counting seconds, also just knows how to make anything ever. So he's immediately like, fishing in rivers and like gathering rare metals and being like, oh, now I made, you know, a transistor or something. Mm. Now like one of the big season one things they build is like sulfa drugs, which is like this long 10-step process. He just knows how to make everything ever.
Right.
But there's a lot of fighting in the show and I wasn't really here for it. And then that plot twist happened that broke the setting for me. So I'm just like, okay, I'm done with the show.
Yeah.
Cut to 7 years later. I've watched all the anime.
What made
I see
you
this on Netflix?
What made you come back to this after a reveal that stupid?
I just wanted to. I don't know.
I just want to watch anime.
You ran out of, Hunter Hunter.
I just want to watch anime. That's it. It's just he doesn't even care. He will shovel any slop into his mouth at this point, so long as it's got anime.
I was scrolling at Netflix and stopped on Dr. Stone, and the first episode started auto playing. And I happened to look it up and see that currently airing at the same time, this was in, like, April, is that, oh, the final season just started airing. So I'm like, okay, I'll just catch up over the next, like, 3 months, and we'll be good. And then, unless it's terrible, then I'll just drop it again. But I went into season one with a more open mind. I was like, oh, there's really not that much fighting in this show compared to what I had remembered. Yes, I still didn't like that one big plot twist, but I rolled with it more that I saw it coming this time. And then I got to the later seasons, and wow, there's a lot of fighting in the show.
This is the thing you didn't want.
But because I've been watching so many like action shonen shows, I was still here for it.
You're inoculated now?
Yeah. I think there's definitely a certain vibe that the author wanted for the show because the premise of the show is so unimaginably wide that there's basically anything you could do with it. Because the main premise they set up is like, we're going to rebuild civilization and revive all 7 billion people that got petrified. It's that's such a massive in scale project.
I mean, he's Dr. Stone. He can make anything. Just make an unpetrification machine and you're good,
well, they don't
right?
Really, but then you have to think about, like, once you start unpetrifying people, you have to feed them. You know, you can't just...
You'll invent but they food. Don't
eat... Well, you don't invent food, you grow it.
You can invent food. They're synthetics.
Okay, he's not at that level, though, because they don't have, you know, electricity. Well, actually,
because that would make the plot convenient.
But, yeah. Like, the show is completely uninterested in it actually being a city-building show. Because it's, like, at the end of season two is when they first mentioned farming and like, hey, we've got all these people. Let's like actually like start developing crops properly. But then, so like they have like one episode where they actually develop the settlement they're living in and then immediately build a boat and go somewhere else. Like we got to get away from that. We're going to go have an island adventure and fight some other cavemen. And you know,
we got to fight.
We're doing something.
It's been a while since we fought. It's been a whole 2 episodes since somebody fought. And this is just not going to do.
Cause then, in season 3, or actually start of season 4, you know, they take that boat and they go all the way to America now. And for some reason, there's dudes with guns there.
I mean, why not? Like, it's America. It's America. That makes sense.
I'm just like, oh, the fighting just never stops in this show. But, like, it is still an enjoyable watch. I had a lot of fun getting there. The final core is funny because they finally finish all the fighting. And it's like, okay, now it's actually time to do the big thing we said we were going to do 24 episodes ago and revive all 7 billion people. And they fucking zip through it so goddamn fast. The last arc is a little disappointing because they just yada, yada, yada through. Like, literally, there's one episode that takes place over like 3 or 4 years.
Oh my God.
Like, the last season itself is like 7 years out of a total of 10 for the whole show.
Uh-huh.
And they don't even really show that. They're just like, oh, we built a thing and it blew up. So, okay, skip 6 months later. They just go so fast. It's funny. I thought the payoff to the mystery was pretty good. It's also not a mystery I was invested in for 7 years, like people started the manga.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good show. I can't believe I'm saying that after being so pissed off by season one back in the day. And then I played some video games.
What?
What?
Insert air horns.
I've had a tough time with games this year. I took 3 months off to just watch anime, and a lot of that was Dr. Stone, because that's like a 100-episode show.
And then you played Mina the Hollower, and that was just like, yeah, well, and great.
And was like, started off really strong, kind of ended up by the end. And then I hate to mention this one, because it was like, but... And then I played Silent Hill F, and also kind of bounced off that, even though... I got credits. I did technically beat it once.
That's not the end of that game.
Yeah, well, it's the end for me.
No,
just the point where it's like, hey, you have to replay this at least 2 more times to get the true ending. I'm just like, oh, but it's just, I rationalized it to John earlier of like, this is not the get back into video games game. Because
I don't think
it is so antithetical to fun video game.
Yeah, it's a survival horror game, and those are very famously meant to kind of... There's a misery component to those games.
But even then, the survival horror I'm super used to is Resident Evil, where you have a gun. Mm-hmm. I think those games are still much more traditionally fun.
Sure.
Even though they're stressful. Silent Hill F is just bad melee combat and just an extremely sad story.
And there's a lot of combat from what I gather. And
there's way too much combat. So when you pair that with replay the game multiple times, it's just like, ha ha, I'm not having fun. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ryukishi.
He's telling a good story, but they just built a kind of not fun game to play around it.
It is definitely the, like, if I could just read the story like a visual novel, I would probably be much more here for that. He should try that sometime.
He should. I bet he's got the chops for it.
Yeah. I have been watching LPs of the later loops and seeing some of the new journal entries that show up and going, man, this is getting very Higurashi-esque.
Rhett, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Are you watching VTubers play it?
So,
all right. Okay. That's a yes. Okay. Okay.
I watched an LP of a guy that is not a YouTuber. You know what he did? He stopped after the first ending.
Oh my God.
I was so sad because at the start, I didn't want to check ahead and spoil myself.
Sure.
I'm like, he has 11 episodes of this. It's really good. I'm just going to listen to the whole thing because he's paying way more attention to the story and actually understanding it. He's figuring out like twists before they happen. And then he stops at the first ending, and then I'm like,
oh, that stinks.
And then I'm like, so I look up, yes.
Back to Old Faithful.
Regrettably.
Back to Old Faithful.
Back to Old Faithful. Did anyone in Hollow Life English get past the first ending? Or not get past the first ending, but get to the true ending? And the answer to that was also no.
Oh, no!
I think Gigi dropped it, Bay dropped it. I'm not sure who else played it. But apparently, good old faithful Rene actually played the game 5 fucking times on stream.
Jesus.
And got to the true ending. There's more streams after she beat it than before she beat it. It's like 4 streams to beat it and then 6 to do everything else.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So I'm very slowly picking away at those, regrettably.
Oh, my God.
That sounds like you're still like engaging with Silent Hill F. Yeah. You're still invested in it. Yeah.
I would put my investment right now pretty low. The UFO ending is really funny.
Like Silent Hill's always got those really fun, stupid endings.
This one's very fun. I was like, okay, I feel maybe I could have just YouTubed it and not went through like 4 hours of the game again, but whatever.
Sure.
So
I like ending E. I felt like the big emotional climax was ending E. After the ending C and D climaxing at the same time.
The fact that one of the last big games I played was Nier, which also had you replay it like 4 times. I was just like, Silent Hill, you can't right now. You can't. I'm sorry.
But Nier is a fun video game.
I mean,
dot, dot, dot.
Nier Automata plays still much better than the remake of the first
of
game.
Of the first Nier, yeah.
The first game is still pretty heavy and clunky.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not as bad as... Well, I don't know the original, so I don't want to say it was bad, but I think people obviously prefer Automata's combat.
Yeah.
But so between Mina and Silent Hill, I was at a low for video games, and I find I want to play a fun video game, so you know what I played?
Blotro!
Balloon Kid for the Game Boy.
Oh, God, no. I played Shadow Generations.
All right. Okay.
The semi-sequel to Sonic Generations.
Sonic Generations?
I'm invested in hearing about this
one. Yes,
yes. It's so funny where they just went like fucking 14, 15 or something years later. Let's just go back to Generations because Jesus Christ, nothing else is working.
Nothing else is working out here.
So I feel like you'll know if you'll like this game right away because they've been doing the boost format for so long.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally they get away from it, like Lost World and Frontiers mm-hmm. kind of played a little different. What was Sonic?
I mean, Frontiers, all of the like game bits. It's full of Generations levels.
True. But the open world stuff feels different, doesn't it? Because I sampled that game. I played like 30 minutes. It feels like shit. Yeah, that was what I sampled before hitting that Steam refund button.
Yep.
I go, no, I'm actually maybe not here for this.
No, I'm not here for 20 hours of this.
So the funniest thing about Shadow Generations is that it does the same thing as Sonic Generations of having like levels based on the older games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They have kind of fulfilled the promise of that game though, of being like past and future. Because I had a moment where I go, wait a second. This is a Sonic Forces level. That's the game that came out after Sonic Generations.
Oh my God.
And then one after that is a Frontiers level.
No!
I'm just like, whoa, it's past and future now, if you consider this like a 2011 game. But
sure.
I've always been fine with that. Like, people were like, why are you doing 2006 levels in Sonic Generations? Because it's fun. Because it rules. It rules to do that.
Like the 2000... Crisis City in that game is fantastic. Get out of here.
Levels.
It's one of the best.
Kuso is part of the Sonic DNA. If you're going to make a celebration to Sonic, then you got to also celebrate the Kuso.
Warts and all.
Yeah, there's like another 2006 level in this, and there's a... I guess, apparently, there must be a level based on Shadow the Hedgehog, which I haven't played
either.
I would
have to assume that there's got to be like a Lost Worlds level in there somewhere. Because that's
because Shadow's not in that one.
Oh,
it's every game he's been
okay,
in.
It's every game Shadow's in. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's
good because Lost World is bad.
Yeah. It's really just, it's more Sonic. I keep saying Sonic now.
Sonic.
It's because Shadow.
Shadow.
Like I'm preparing the S in one way.
It's because of Shadow.
What's the. Oi, boy.
Sonic. Playing Sonic Generations.
I mean, I think they took Sonic Generations and cranked it up to 11. Mm-hmm. There's the story in this is so funny because it starts with a recap of Sonic Adventure 2. And you're like, okay, mm-hmm. Gerald Robotnik, Maria, I get all that. And then the opening cutscene goes into Shadow the Hedgehog lore where his DNA is based off like a space wizard, like a Doom Hand or whatever. I don't think that's his actual name,
sure.
But like revealing that Gerald Robotnik like made a Faustian deal with the devil to create the ultimate life form. I'm just like, wait, what? When I'm like 20 years out of date on the lore.
That's funny.
And then, yeah, the whole story payoff is involving that kind of stuff and like.
Mm-hmm.
It gets nuts, and then Shadow gets powers in this game that are based on evil space wizard.
All right.
They go very strange with what his new power sets are. It's like, oh, there's no way to rationalize this stuff in a Sonic game where he's, like, turning into the tentacle monster, basically,
all
at
right.
some point. He's got, like, swimming forms and flying forms. You just can fly a lot by the end. I'm thinking about the last couple levels, though, where it's just like a Sonic Generations level, but with flying, and it's crazy.
That's,
the last couple worlds are so cool.
Oh, man.
I have to see if I still have this installed. Yeah, I had a lot of... This is a fun video game.
Yeah.
Get out of here, Silent Hill.
Yeah, this sounds absolutely like a blast from everybody that I've, you know, heard
play it. And it's like 5 hours long. It gets in.
There you go.
Like,
it gets in, does its thing, and it's out.
It's very close to, like, all killer, no filler.
It doesn't have. Does it have all of like the mini games and stuff between major stages?
It,
like
it does challenge stages. That's how they pad it out a little bit. They're not terrible. They're also maybe not great.
Because I remember when I played Generations, I actually got sucked into doing all of those challenges because I thought that they were legitimately fun, but they were all like. They were all well designed. They were the fun little challenges. So
I think maybe the ones in this are a little bit worse. Mm. I'd have to go back and compare.
Sure.
There's one point at the end where they like have two major events in a row. They don't make you do any challenges. Mm-hmm. And then when I opened the completed save file up, like 10 more had actually opened up, and I was like, oh man.
Oh.
If you had made me do those, that would have killed the pacing. So maybe at some point they were like, just no, we can't.
No.
These get kind of hard. At the end.
Question. We all remember the Sonic Generations final boss.
Oh, the final boss. The bosses in this are so much better.
Okay, because that is the notoriously one of the worst boss fights ever, because I still can't tell you what you do in it, even though I've beaten that game like 5 times. I still don't know what I did to win.
The bosses in this are maybe way too simple. They really just QTE themselves to death. Like, they tell you what buttons to press. But it's a hard swing in the opposite direction from whatever the fucking Sonic Generations final boss was, where it's just you have no idea what's like actually happening.
There's just particle effects on the screen. I guess you're supersonic. You're moving forward. I don't know what's controlling that.
God, I got every achievement in Sonic Generations.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And one of them is beat the final boss without getting hit.
Yep.
It really was just, I'm just going to do this like 5 times in a row, and eventually luck will happen, and it did.
That's pretty much my experience with that.
Because I just didn't really know what was going on. Yeah, I felt like in the Shadow Bosses, I knew what was going on. They were just very easy, because they're so telegraphed.
Sure, sure.
Gotcha.
But I was not like mad at the final boss or anything.
Yeah, so like it's just a good game ending on a fun final boss or something. Like this just sounds like this game just sounds like it's perfectly honed in a way that kind of excites me to give it a shot. Mm-hmm.
That rolls.
Yeah. So I played one more game. I'll hit this one quickly. Mm-hmm. I played Homura Hime.
Oh yeah, this is one that I have. Like, there was a Steam Next Fest a long time ago, and I was like, man, this seems really good.
I was talking to you guys. I was saying, oh, the stages are so long, my attention span. This is a Devil May Cry like, and there's like 5 main levels. So they, for like a 20-hour game, they go on for a bit. Mm-hmm. The pacing of bosses is like really bad early on. I thought the end game kind of saved it all and wrapped it up nicely. But yeah, it's a very smooth playing. I don't know Devil May Cry games that well. Sure. I've only played the 4th one, which is like not one of the ones people really go to bat for.
Yeah.
It's always like 1, 3, 5.
1, 3, and 5. Yeah.
There's a lot of parrying in this, and you have like no cooldown on your parry.
You can just go crazy. Also,
I don't think the sound effects in this game are very good, except for the parry sound effect. When you hit that, it feels fucking awesome every single time. Mm-hmm. When you parry an enemy that's attacking you from off screen, from behind, and you just get it, it feels really good. This game, the final boss, made me imagine I was playing Sekiro at, like, perfect level.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Because it's just, like, nice, telegraphed, very... The parry is so forgiving, and there's, like, even a charm to put, like, extra, like, 0.15 seconds on the parry. So, and I didn't even end up using that, because I was like, no, I could do more damage.
Yeah,
the bosses in this are really good. I do wish there were more. I kind of thought this was going to be closer to Fury in terms of all bosses, no stages. Mm-hmm. So when I was playing it was like, hey, here's like an hour and a half stage and then a boss. And then when I got... the difficulty was so funny because like the tutorial is really easy. The first stage is really easy. And then the first boss took me like an hour. It is such a funny like... Okay, now we're playing the game for real. I'm taking the gloves off and just immediately punching you in the face.
Yeah!
Because, like, you're dying in a few hits. You have to be nailing basically every single parry for, like, 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a second phase, which
feels so
thankfully,
good.
Thankfully, the second phase checkpointed. Right. I was like, no. What do you mean there's a whole second part here after, like, 30 minutes? I have this arduous uphill climb against the first boss, and the second boss was also still pretty hard. And then, like, every other boss the rest of the game was either a first or second try kill.
Because you're god game, like, oh. Really.
Yeah, the numbers really start to skew more in your favor. Like, hey, you don't die in like three hits. Hey, you've learned the parry timing, which is if you miss the first parry, just keep hitting the button. You'll probably hit the second one.
Yeah. It's like you can do that. You can do that in East 8 as well, where if like you land the parry, you can just keep jamming on the button and getting like 50 parries in a row. It's really good.
Basically. Yes. The story is a little underplayed at the start and then goes real hard towards the end. It does a very generic thing that gets me every time. Like one of those tropes where I'm just like, yeah, you didn't really earn this, but I'm a sucker for this trope, so I'm going to cry anyway.
All right, there it is, folks. On your bingo cards, Rhett cried.
Everyone playing with somebody for real, do that.
Yeah.
Make a bingo card.
We mentioned that in last episode. Somebody needs to make some SoxCast bingo cards and not show them to us and then show us the results sometime.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. The point was to not show us, so maybe somebody did do it.
Yeah.
Maybe they're doing it right now.
Maybe. They could be. I still think Rhett cried is the center square.
It can't be completely free. Sometimes it doesn't happen.
It's true.
But yeah, ultimately came up with a thumbs up on that one.
Nice. I'm excited because this is one I was excited for quite a while. I know Kusakari played it and was not a fan. Just did not. He used the term parry slop, and I'm just like, get out of here. Mean, shut up.
I mean, I also can't really disagree with that because it's so overpowered.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun parries.
Yeah.
I don't play a ton of games that are based around that. Yeah, so
like it's just
if you moderate yourself, it stays a little fresh.
Yeah,
I haven't played Expedition 33.
There you go.
You want parries in your JRPG? Apparently, everyone said yeah.
Nah, that was hot. That was hotly contested, and then there was a whole difficulty discourse about how it wasn't fair that players were expected to play the video game or something. You know, you remember that whole deal.
Oh, yeah.
We have different experiences. Reset Era was like, this is game of the year, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then admitted the story sucks after chapter one.
Well,
you're sometimes checked out of like Blue Sky discourses, right? Which is probably
I do not see literally any.
Yeah, it's
Blue
good.
Sky discourses.
Yeah. It's good that you don't see a lot of it because there's a lot of really stupid stuff.
We live in different worlds, you and I.
Yep.
So that's what I've been up to. I've also been puzzle slutting very hard, but we're going kind of long and I haven't finished it.
Puzzle slutting?
Yeah.
All right.
John, I've also played multiple Sokobans.
Oh, okay. Okay. I saw you were playing the other day.
Oh, that game is like an appetizer to the other one I've been playing.
Okay.
Rhett was linking. Oh, that was what it was. It was Isle of Sea and Sky. And I was like, oh, another fucking puzzle
right.
slide.
Yeah, that showed up. Like, because like me and Rhett, we're like family members. So we, you know, we Steam family share. And that popped up on my, like thing of like what's new in Steam updates. I'm like, when did I ever play that? And I was like, and then I looked at it and go, oh, that is something I wouldn't play.
John looked at it and went, this is poison. Polly looked at it and went, oh, there's something I want to play. I looked at that Steam page and went, fucking $4, I'll buy it.
You've never broken a mouse before buying a game until this point. Just slam that fucking thing.
Just imagine, Polly, it's like a Sokoban game, but you also collect Zelda abilities.
No!
So whenever you get to a hard puzzle, you don't know if the puzzle's just hard or if you don't have the ability to get through it.
Right.
Doesn't that sound so fun?
So enticing.
It's like
so that's why I called Rhett a puzzle slot.
It's like if Witness and Void Stranger had a baby.
Oh my god.
It's very fun.
And Jonathan Blow was there.
In the cuck chair.
Yep.
In the cuck chair.
He would love the cuck chair. Jonathan Blow.
Yeah, I feel like.
Jonathan Blow, if there is any game developer that I think is probably like a for real life cuck, it's Jonathan Blow. That dude loves stroking his shit, watching somebody just bang the shit out of whoever was unfortunate enough to marry him.
Holy shit. It's hearing.
I was going to say he's in the cuck chair just watching people play his games and getting mad.
That too. That Soulja Boy clip lives in his fucking brain, man.
Forever.
It ain't about nothing. Look at this game. It's stupid. It ain't about nothing.
I said the word searing and my phone popped up like, oh,
Siri. Oh, yeah. You, man, we live in a hell. We live in a hellscape. Hello, Siri. Hello, Siri. Hello, Siri.
You have headphones on.
I know. I'm not trying to get you. I'm trying to get anybody listening to it on speakers. Yeah. Okay. Hello, Siri. Hello, Siri.
Alexa.
No.
Purchase. Shit.
No.
Purchase Ooh on Steam.
All right.
Old bit. All right. I'll go next.
All right, John.
So I completely blazed over this last time, but I played, for the very first time, I played Dragon Quest 1 and 2 on NES.
On an actual shoebox.
Well, okay, I played it on my phone, but I did play the NES versions.
Oh, okay.
So these aren't technically the original versions of the game, because unlike a lot of Famicom games, the Famicom versions of Dragon Quest got significant updates, moving from Famicom to NES, and that's true across all four games. So like the most immediate one is like, oh, in Dragon Quest 1, you actually face up, down, left, right, instead of moving your character around like an avatar sprite where you just start facing one direction the whole time. Mm-hmm. They all got, you get more XP and gold in all of the American versions. Mm-hmm. They all added new title screens to all of them. Dragon Quest 2 has a new intro. Dragon Quest 3 has a new attract mode cutscene. There's a lot of little tweaks. It's like they use them as, like, okay, we have a little more time. Let's punch this up just a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then Dragon Quest 3 sold 3 million copies on the first day. Was it the... I'll ask Cecile if it was the first day or total, but I think it might have been... It sold 3 million copies at least.
It was it was the first... One of the first major video game events ever, like Super Mario Brothers 3 was in America.
I was looking at sales figures with Cecile. Mario 3... got 1.5 million copies when it came the year it came out, and Dragon Quest III just completely lapped it. That's crazy.
That is insane.
It's not even close. Every time a Dragon Quest came out, it was like an order of magnitude above everything else. Whatever was in second place.
You can only release these on the weekends from now on. That kind of deal.
At least starting from Dragon Quest II.
Yeah, at least starting from like the. I think that started with 3 and 4, didn't it?
The weekends thing was 3 as okay, at least that's the anecdote. So Dragon Quest 1 and 2. But so what I'm saying is it's not technically accurate to say that the NES versions are the original versions, but they are the versions that I feel good about playing.
Sure.
I like the changes, I like all of it. And I've been afraid of these versions for years because these were my first Famicom NES RPGs. I played just completely in their completely organic form. Mm-hmm. I've played like Final Fantasy 1 and 3 to like halfway through on NES, mm-hmm, or Famicom. But I only actually finished like the Origins remake of Final Fantasy 1, right, or the GBA remakes, okay, or stuff like that. I played Mother 1 on the GBA with the Easy Ring, and it was I played Phantasy Star on GBA. I haven't actually played a lot of 8-bit console RPGs in their native form,
yeah.
And I've been scared of them. I'm like, oh, these are going to be so grindy and slow. It's going to suck. I don't know. I'm not ready. So, like, Dragon Quest 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is, like, one of my favorite runs of games ever. And I've only played, like, the SNES Game Boy Color versions, the DS remakes. Mm-hmm.
God, those DS remakes are real good.
They're really good though. They're really good remakes. They feel great. Yeah. They look great. Mm-hmm. I love everything about them. But I was ready. I was ready to play OG Dragon Quest, and then I chewed through Dragon Quest 1 in like 3 days.
Yeah, like it is like very much in the, like, I'm not gonna say it's like as short as something like East. It's definitely longer, mm-hmm, but it's definitely like I replayed Final Fantasy 1 this year on the Pixel Remaster, and even though it's not a comparable thing, you still get the feeling. Yeah, this is a very small scope thing that you can finish in a very reasonable amount of time.
Dragon Quest 1 or Final Fantasy 1?
Final Fantasy 1. But I have played through Dragon Quest 1, and I have had the similar experience of like, I beat this in like 3 days. It was fun, cute, breezy little time.
Yeah, Final Fantasy 1 is also pretty compact. Dragon Quest 1 is very small.
Oh, yeah, it's super small. Yeah.
The SNES and Game Boy Color versions, I do think that for most people, the SNES and Game Boy Color versions are going to be the ideal ways
to play those games, I think, yeah.
I feel like DQ1 benefits a lot from being like an 8-hour micro RPG. Yeah. I feel like that suits its amount of content, its language very well. Mm-hmm. I did have fun exploring it, finding all the clues organically. Like, I knew where most everything was, but it was nice to be like, okay, here's where I'm supposed to figure this out.
Yeah.
Here's where I'm supposed to figure this out. Grinding a bunch and then beating the... Oh, and actually mapping out the dungeons, because the dungeon designs... Not for two, but for one specifically, are simplified on the SNES and Game Boy Color.
Mm-hmm.
And so this time I got to map them out, and it felt really nice. Mm-hmm. So I had fun with that, and then Dragon Quest II took like a full month of on and off play.
Much, much bigger endeavor.
That is a... If DQ1 is like a weirdo micro-RPG thing, DQ2 is a full-ass RPG, and one of my favorites. I always really liked the Game Boy Color version.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I liked it on my replay, and I had a fucking ball with this one. I really, really like DQ2. I think that there's enough stuff to do at any given point that it basically never feels as grindy as one does, where you can run out of stuff.
Yeah, you will just explore. It's like, no, you've kind of just got to run around this cave for a while, because the only way you're getting that next sword and shield is you need the cash for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You will run up against the edges of the world before you hit the levels, and that very rarely happened for me playing Dragon Quest II, because there's so much to explore. You have a pretty linear opening act where you're collecting all your guys, and then the world map theme changes from like sad lonely theme to happy you're with your friends theme,
an adventuring theme.
You're adventuring with your friends. And then you get the boat, and
there's the moment.
That's it. It just doesn't get better than this, y'all. you get a whole world. You have five doodads that are somewhere, and you just gotta run around to everywhere and figure out where stuff is. And they're not just like, here's the world. There's five dungeons, and at the end of each dungeon is a boss.
Thing.
And behind
no,
each
it's,
boss
it's
is
not like
thing.
That at all.
No, it's like this one is at the end of a long dungeon. This one is on the floor.
Yep.
Outside of this is an outside of a floor in town. This one's in a different, like, off to the side in the final dungeon. This one's here. Like, they go really nuts with it. And I think that is what makes part of what makes 2 feel special to me compared with the later games.
Because it's not predictable. Yeah. It hasn't settled
it makes
into
it feel
the
like more of an adventure.
Yeah, it hadn't settled into the formula yet, where we'd kind of started to develop the language of JRPG, whereas Dragon Quest II is still very much like it has those adventure game roots where you're going to root around, you've got to explore, there's more to it than just the thing at the end of a dungeon, and that becomes way more uniform as the series goes on.
100%. I love 3, but I feel like that's the big thing that this
one
has over 3.
Yeah, that's the one where, you know, like Final Fantasy had already been out at this point, and we'd already kind of started moving in that more uniform direction. So,
yeah, I feel that 100%. So this is like, I think 1 is doing its own thing, and I think it's really nice. I think 2 is the one that's like, this is we've established the Dragon Quest language. We've established you can just have a world and you can explore it and poke around it, and also the combat language of just, we kind of take it for granted now, but attack, magic, item, you have run, you have this much MP,
yep,
you have these characters that learn these abilities at this level. That wasn't set in stone. If you play old computer RPGs, that is not at all standardized across different games. And Dragon Quest II, you can just play it like, oh, okay, here's what everybody was riffing on at this point. Mm-hmm. This is the game that RPG Maker was made to make games like.
Yes!
which rules. So I just love this one to bits. I had a ton of fun exploring them. I made a big Excel map of the world map. I was like, all right, what haven't I followed up on yet? What are my open threads? I was scribbling through the game like a detective. I'd mostly forgotten where everything was, so I had to figure most of it out myself.
Mm-hmm.
The final dungeon gauntlet is fucking brutal.
I mean, yeah, as is very kind of that is a common thing, NES / Famicom RPGs, I think.
It's common with NES Famicom RPGs, and Dragon Quest II is particularly like infamous for it. Like the party line with two is like, they made one and it was great. Then they didn't have enough time to work on two, so it's really unbalanced, and the finale is way too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made three and it was great. But like I had a blast with two. I just like kept poking my way into the big scary dungeon, mapping stuff out, retreating, healing up, going back in, leveling up the whole time. It was slow going, but I always felt in control of my progress. And then there's a bit where there's random enemies that have instant kill spells, and one of them has a spell that if it uses it, it instantly wipes out your whole party. Fine. I didn't even run into that. I fought a bunch of those guys, and I didn't have that happen once. And I only got wiped by the regular instant kill enemies that target individual characters a couple times.
Right.
So like, it's fine.
It's fine.
You got a save point right there. Right. Stop crying. Just figure it out. You're a big boy. You can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I really I had a blast with this one. This is I think 1 through 5 is just what Dragon Quest 1 through 5 is like the most solid run of RPGs in a big series ever.
Yeah, it's a real good one. 5 games in a row that are all good and fun, and they all, like, despite, you know, later installments again coming to a more uniform design, they all still have really cool shit going on and that make them unique.
What's wrong with Dragon Quest 6 though?
I just haven't played.
I have not played it.
Okay, it's just the way you worded that. Like 1 through 5, perfect run.
It could be 1 through 6. Like, it very well could be.
Maybe. Well, the thing is, 1 through 5. Like the core creative team there of Toriyama, whatever Sugiyama and Hori stays the same across all the games, but 1 through 5 were developed at Chunsoft.
Right.
And published by Enix.
Yep. Yep.
After that, it got moved off of Chunsoft to Heartbeat, who did 6 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
Who did 6-7, you could say.
To 6-7!
Gen Alpha friends.
Damn it.
And then 8 and 9 were level 5, and that now everything since then has been in-house at Square Enix. It's a different dev. It's a very different style. Okay. The games get much longer. Like 6 is like 40 yeah. hours on how long to beat.
You were talking to me about 7 epic. Being this app fucking
God.
100 hour epic.
I remember me and my friend playing like he had bought Dragon Quest 7 and we were going to go to his place and hang out all night and play it. And literally did not see a single piece of combat that entire
so
night.
Funny.
It's like literally 10 hours of story. And then you
10 hours of missed puzzles,
missed
right?
Missed puzzles as well. It's just... It is.
As the puzzle slut, apparently. That sounds amazing.
It was a slog.
You have a bunch of puzzles and story, and then you finally start doing combat, and then like a dozen plus hours later, then you start unlocking the job system.
Yep, yep.
Oh my God.
It is unbelievable.
And then there's
one...
And then there's 80 more hours of game after that.
Yeah, that game
yeah,
is...
Yeah, that's the part where I'm like, eh.
That game is so long.
So that's why I'm, you know, I'll get to those someday. I'm not, and also 6 doesn't have a good fan translation. The existing one is kind of busted. There's a couple efforts in the works for getting a polished one out, but that's a bit of a bummer. I could play the DS remake, but at this point I feel kind of married to continuing with the original versions, so... That was the Dragon Quest arc. I had a great time. 2's amazing. Still a favorite. And then I did the hardest thing in a video game I've ever done.
Here we go.
I beat Invictus.
There we go.
4 months. God, 4 months. It was March 1st to July 1st.
Plus all the Kaizo training beforehand.
Yeah, no, really. It was like... like all told, this is like 150 hours.
Yeah, this is a big monster of a game.
So the game itself, I have the time. It was like 36 hours. Only two levels. The rule I set for myself was that a Kaizo level isn't hard. Invictus is a Kaizo Mario World, is a Kaizo Mario Super Mario World hack from 2018. It was very formative in the scene. It pulled together a lot of lessons from games in like 2014 to 2017. It's very long. It's very hard. It is also, but it's not impossible either. It's very considered. There's very little RNG. It's built to be speedrun. It's built to, like, if you speedrun it, there aren't any, like, there are hard parts, but there's not, here's the big RNG block. Here's the big boring part where you have to wait for 30 seconds. It's very considered around, like, constant action, varied pace and aesthetics, so you don't get bored looking at the same things over and over. Mm-hmm. It's very well made. It's a very, this is a new favorite game, just in terms of, like, okay, this was the climax of a very strong personal arc. Cause I watched GD Cube run this like 5+ years ago. And I thought, that looks so cool. And over the last 3 years, since late 2023, I've been building up to playing this game specifically. And I've been chugging at it cause it's 22 exits and each exit, most exits have two checkpoints. And my rule is, it's not hard unless it takes more than 2 hours to clear one checkpoint. Because that's when it's like, okay, now I'm going insane.
Now there's something we're really not grasping here.
There is something I am stuck. Right, because most of the checkpoints were like 45 minutes. So, you know, doing that over several months, you can chug away. There's a couple that are like an hour and a half. There were two checkpoints that took me almost 5 hours on the dot. They're right near the end.
One was the
final boss, and one was the second checkpoint of Absolute Power, which is the level that plays Megalovania in background.
Yeah.
And those are the ones where I was like, all right, we got to buckle down here. We really got to take this seriously, because it is very taxing to spend 5 hours on like 40 to 70 seconds of platform.
Yeah, that's again, like, that is literally going insane kind of deal there.
Yep. But I knew at the end, because what happened was, I was like, I'd learned most of Kamek, who's the final boss, and then I like accidentally exited out of the level, and for reasons it wouldn't start me back at the checkpoint. And I had to redo the three checkpoints of the final level that lead up to Kamek.
That's so deflating.
Uh-huh. And I was just
gotta do it over.
So I was so deflated. I put it down for the night. I'd been hoping to win that night. And then I picked it back up the next day, and I was just staring at it like, fuck me. Oh, this is so hard. I was already 4 hours into Kamek. This is so hard. And I started crying.
Oh, no!
Cecile came in. I just said, I want this so much. And I haven't had a response like that to a video game that I can remember.
That is very intense. I don't know that intense. I've ever had that kind of moment with a video game. It's crazy.
I'm pretty certain you put more hours into Gradius 3.
Okay, now that I think about it.
Yeah, that's probably the closest.
Yeah.
And I think Gradius 3 is almost certainly harder than Invictus. Like, we're spreading out the genre knowledge a little more. Like with Kaizo Mario, I was very drilled down and focused on this.
And you're doing little 35 to 60 second checkpoints, whereas I'm doing the entire fucking game over if I get one death in one specific area because there is no good recover option. Yes. Hello, Q Brush.
So that's the joy of Gradius. Sylvie just got 10 million points in Gradius 1, so that's a different kind of insanity.
Good God.
So this is not even close to like as intense as, you know, video action game challenges get, but it was the most intense it's ever gotten for me It felt more demanding than any of my arcade ones he sees.
Yeah, I can see
which
that.
Which feels nuts. That was a big part of my Kaizo Mario arc, is just recognizing, like, okay, you can feel like a substantive action game journey that feels as potent a game arc as an arcade 1cc, mm-hmm. without actually doing 1ccs.
Right.
If you make the individual checkpoints interesting and demanding enough, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's a couple things with Invictus. In the last five levels, they introduce, they have a whole level introducing the idea of you press L or R to make blocks on the screen. The blocks in the level either vanish or appear.
Yeah.
So you're in control of which blocks are on and off, and you have to switch them on and off as you progress by tapping L or R.
Oh, that's so fun.
It's very fun. And then the absolute power, the hardest level, was the Megalovania level, was you can switch between regular jumps and spin jumps in midair by changing which button you're holding.
Mm. Oh, that's
it's
just it's wrapping evil. My brain around that now and seeing that in my head and what they could do that is absolutely devious with it. Yeah, that's scary.
It's evil.
Yeah, that's a lot of evil there.
Uh-huh. Some of the other chocolate gimmicks are assembly coded game elements that were not in the original game beyond just graphical changes. Thwomps that go down and then left or right.
Yep.
Vertically screen wrapping stages. So you're bouncing up and down on a saw blade, and then the saw blade falls and you have to jump up and then land on the same saw blade
and land on the same one as it's falling. But we gotta remember, it's a spin jump. It's a spin jump.
Uh-huh. And then in the final level is three checkpoints before Kamek, and the three checkpoints are you can switch the blocks with L and R, and you can switch your jumping.
Oh, no!
Mid-jump. And one of the checkpoints has screen wrap.
Oh, fantastic.
It's really good.
That is so much evil.
Uh-huh. The actual final level isn't that hard outside of the final boss. Like, the three checkpoints took me, half hour to 45 minutes each to do the first time. And then when I went back through it, when I actually buckled down to get back to Kamek, they each took me 5 minutes. It was really satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But it doesn't need to be that hard. You already got through the Megalovania castle. You have Kamek ahead. This is part of there's ups and downs there's ebbs and flows to the difficulty and pacing. That feels very musical to me. It's not just blasting you at 100% all the time, because that's not a good album.
No.
You want stuff that's slow. The level right before the final level is the only level in the game that's only one checkpoint, and it's not overly long. It's just like, hey, you got through this, and then it ends before you expect it to, and you're like, all right, final level time. There's a lot of little touches like that that just make the pacing feel very intentional, and they balance moments of terror and surprise and negative surprise with moments of relief and release,
mm-hmm.
In ways that feel very intentional, and I really enjoyed that and appreciated that. It's not just trying to beat you into submission. What else was I thinking of? I just really like this one. Kamek's fucking hard.
Yeah, seen that fight because we probably watched the same GDQ run, but my God, it's just an exercise in willpower, in pure skill, reaction time. It's a perfect boss fight in a way.
It's very well done. It is 70 seconds. There are no checkpoints. Mm-hmm. I think the hardest section is actually the third section. And then after that, it's just like the fourth section is very tricky routing.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to route it out. So, and doing that, you know, a minute into the fight is really tense. But once you can consistently get past the really hard shell jump part, there's a disco shell during the fight, of course.
A fucking I love me some Kaizo at this point. I can play them competent. I I can't do the fucking yellow shells, man. I just can't.
So fucking mean.
I can't.
They never stop being mean.
No.
You figure out how to approach individual challenges.
Yes.
In ways that are workable. But every time the disco shell shows up, it's still like, oh fuck me. God, oh,
forget
no.
Forget this, man. Yeah, anytime I've seen one in any hack I've played, I just kind of cry. Like, those and the Chuck Gates can get on my nerves.
Fucking Chuck Gates, man. There's only one of those. There's only a couple of those in this one. It's not in a particularly hard level, right. But still.
It's just, good, you...
You. Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Hello, Jerry.
So, fucking rips. I fucking beat it. It was really hard. It took a really long time. I'm going to take a break. Need some games that aren't projects for a while.
Yeah,
please.
Yeah. Enjoy some nice... You know, gaming's supposed to be fun, John. You're supposed to have a good time.
Well, that's the thing, is that when you push yourself and open yourself up to these new experiences and learn and push through the difficulty, you get to a point where it's like, okay, now I can literally like go, there's a whole suite of Kaizo hacks that are like, I could do this in a week and it'd be fun.
But do you want, you know, your gaming diet to be that all the time?
Well, what I mean is like, when you push yourself and do hard stuff that's outside of your normal wheelhouse, like for me, that was the Kaizo hacks. It was playing an actual Famicom RPG or playing like the PC RPGs. It's hard up front, but now I feel pretty confident I could load up Mother on my phone now and just have a good time.
Yeah.
It's still a long game, but it's not scary. I'm going to be just playing a fun game, and my palette for fun normal video game has expanded.
Very cool.
I joked online, like, I don't play weird freak games for I don't play weird games for freaks like all my friends. I don't vibe with all that shit. Void Stranger or whatnot. I listed a bunch of them.
Tunic, just, Animal Well. Blueprints.
No, well, like, okay, until you said that one, I was feeling a little called out there.
No. I was thinking, like Sylvie has games that are very approachable.
Sylvie's got some sicko games,
and then she has some turbo sicko games. A lot of friends have games that are like Sreika has games that are very approachable, and then games that are turbo sicko games that I'm too afraid of. So my joke is. Or like you playing Gradius 3 to the end.
Sure.
That's too scary for me.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. So my joke is I don't play weird games for freaks. I just incrementally push the boundaries of what I consider normal until it is indistinguishable from the freak games. One little teeny jump at step at a time. If you keep doing that, then eventually you're playing Bard's Tale Apple II, which I really want to be playing. Right now, but I need to not start a project game.
No,
it's
projects.
Gonna be a long one.
No projects.
No projects. And my so far I've been like no big RPGs this year or this month. I read all the rest of Delicious and Dungeon and had a great time. Mm-hmm. Fucking really good comic.
You didn't even talk about that. Yeah, I was about to say, like, this was a pretty big, this is what I remember the most, despite the fact that, I mean, Invictus was big, but just the fact that you literally ate through Delicious and Dungeon. See what I did there?
3 days.
In 3 days.
4 days. Four days.
That is crazy.
I was like, he's going through this very fast, it seems like. He just started talking about it, and then he finished it.
It is a reasonably, like, sized story. Yeah. Like, it's not like a never-ending shonen show, which is what I thought it was going to be when I went into the anime a year or two ago, which I liked. I wasn't over the moon for it, but it was just, I would watch more of that.
Well, they're making more in October.
In October.
27.
And
yeah.
There October 2027.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's like, wow.
It's not this October.
I thought it was this October.
It's not this October. Everybody was mad about that.
Oh, shit, really? Oh, no.
Yeah, man, it's like, you know, if I get interested and the spark hits me for that story again, I'm just going to read the manga.
I'm just going to start over, yeah. It's only 24 episodes or so.
I like trying out new flavors of snobbery, like different changes of clothes just to see if they fit right, just mm-hmm. to see how they feel. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying out since reading Dungeon Meshi. I'm trying out the manga reader supremacy flavor of snobbery, and I tell you, it feels really nice. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you're waiting for the anime. Oh, I read the manga. It was really good. Sorry, you have to wait till 2027. That's brutal.
Manga doesn't have all your favorite voice actors.
Manga, I need my story read to me because I'm a little baby.
Yeah, Rhett. Damn. He called you out. Sorry. What are you going to do about that?
Oh, he calls me out all day in the
DMs. Yeah, he does.
Call out all our fucking friends. Oh, I can't have my story. I don't want to read my story, and I can't have it read to me in Japanese. That's not. I'd have to read along with the subtitles. I need it read to me in English, please.
I love this voice you're affecting for this hypothetical person. It's very good.
Well, since it's a lot of our social circle. No, the light novel snobbery and the uh-huh. manga reader snobbery. It's feeling pretty good.
I feel like I could easily get in on light novel snobbery, like, because it's already mm-hmm. like it's just like, oh, it's just visual novel without as many pictures.
Oh, but exactly. You're not reading it in the original language. You're reading the translation.
Oh, there's always gonna be some.
There's gonna be some adaptation there. Yeah.
Until 10 years from now, and I could spend. Cecile's helped me learn Japanese. Yeah, exactly. I'm reading the light novels in Japanese, mm-hmm. and then I can be a snob to the people reading them in translation.
Then we'll have hit my
final form.
That'll be John's final form. That'll be the one where like me and Rhett literally drive to his house and beat him with hammers.
This is a good bit. Please don't let it distract from Dungeon Meshi just being very, very good.
No, you have excited me for a series that I was only merely like, that's okay. Like, I like that. It was all right.
So. Yeah, it's very funny and cute up front. The jokes are, I really like the jokes of just like bad things happening to a cute elf. That's mm-hmm. very good.
That's great.
That's great.
Tom is also a fan.
And then they hit the dragon fight.
Yeah.
Which I was like, kind of sat up and was like, okay, you have my attention.
Okay, you're putting it on the table. Let's go.
Uh-huh. And I think the thing with it is that the characters are all really cute and lovable and fun. They all have dimensionality to them that gets explored throughout the game, throughout the comic. The setting gets fleshed out in a really, really cool way. There's intense amounts. There's fantasy novel,
huge consideration world building
put into the setting. It feels like a real place. And it's tightly plotted. It keeps after that dragon fight, it basically just keeps mm-hmm. going. It is like building towards.
That is the moment things have changed and now we're focused. Yeah.
There is something at the bottom of this dungeon, and we are going to find out what it is, and the answers are not going to be what we expect, and then things are going to continue. We will be exploring the ramifications of those answers in very climactic, dramatic ways for, like, the last four volumes.
That's very, very cool, and, like, I admire a manga that's, you know, can, like, do that kind of thing and wrap itself up confidently.
Yep, It's like, I think we have there's a specific flavor of blockbuster that we all really like. That's like Trails or Good VNs or whatnot, where it gets in, you have characters you really like. It builds to a really cathartic climax. And I think Delicious and Dungeon just neatly fits into that mold.
Yeah.
I joked afterwards that I did need to read a anything where like characters die or have sex, because that is a recurring thing with me, like playing games or reading anime. It's like, boy, this is great. I will say for any of the stories out there that in which nobody gets naked or fucks, Dungeon Meshi or dies. Dungeon Meshi is very horny and very morbid. There is there are frames of this that are like, oh goodness, somebody felt a charge while drawing this.
This was somebody's thing.
Uh-huh. It is very it's very interested in death in like a morbid, creative, potentially erotic way.
Yeah. That's entirely my shit.
It's very much my shit. Like it's very much a PG-13 manga. It's an all ages manga. Anyone can enjoy this, but there's that edge to it that I do really enjoy.
It's kind of like the Shantae games where you know somebody's sitting there wanking it when they're drawing those enemy designs.
Those games are so not subtle about the horny.
Shantae. Dungeon Meshi is operating about 100 levels higher than whatever level of horny Shantae's operating.
Sure, but that's like an example I could easily... mean.
There's a charge.
Yeah.
There's a charge to it. Yeah, and that counts for me. That is a positive for me versus stuff that just feels like bloodless and chaste.
Yeah. Sorry, Trails. Somebody needs to be fucking here.
Somebody needs to be. No, I think our Trails fans, friends, including y'all, would get a big kick out of the rest of Delicious and Dungeon.
Yeah.
I think it's very much the same kind of blockbuster.
Yeah.
Polly.
Yo!
What have you been up to?
Guys, I don't want to shock anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I read a visual novel.
Oh, my God.
What? Oh, I know. No. I'm going to try to get your shock out now. So I read Wonderful Every Day.
Oh, I want to hear about this.
This is another one of those like big ones you hear about in like YouTube videos and Reddit and forums and the opinions where it's like, oh, it's the greatest thing of all time and it's the most fucked up thing of all time.
Oh, no. You know, it's that, you're setting us up for a specific response here.
It's that specific reputation that Sayano Uta has. Like, for similar reasons of it's both acclaimed and it's exceptionally violent and sexual. So we got all your sex. If you need some sex in your media, there's a whole lot of sex that happens in Wonderful Every Day. So, you know, just saying.
There you go, something.
So, more so than you'll encounter, both violence and sex-wise, than Sayano Uta as well. kind of manages to get, you know, like, Sayano Uta is like entry-level baby's first weird visual novel, and I think that Wonderful Every Day does indeed step things up a little bit.
Talk about somebody who has incrementally pushed their boundaries of normal. Like, I'm right there with you, but... that is pretty fucked up. That's where we're at.
maybe something's wrong with us.
Maybe. Wait, are we the freaks?
So Wonderful Every Day.
Sayano Uta isn't even the most fucked up.
No,
Urobuchi VN that he did at Nitro Plus.
Not at all. It's a sweet little monster love story.
Just a sweet little love story.
So, Wonderful Every Day, it's a story that takes place from the perspective of three or four different protagonists, and it follows each of them through the events of July 2010, and all of those preceding routes, and as you can probably imagine, at some point, this timeline ends in some dramatic, drastic, and catastrophic ways. And so it's... a game where you spend a good deal of it sort of seeing the events play out from different perspectives and or different points in time, but also the same point in time. This game's one of those games where they're just going to start telling you real early on, hey, timeline stuff's happening. Buckle up.
One of those, Vians.
Buckle up, boys. It's about to get real timey wimey in here.
We're doing that thing that all of the VNs do.
Yeah. There is a Schrodinger's cat reference. By the way,
holy shit.
Yep, we've got Schrodinger's cat. Don't worry.
You thought we were on Earth? Why do things fall at a normal rate?
That's so weird.
Despite the gravity change?
Why is the moon red? We're all making the same joke here.
Yep.
So it's a game where you kind of spend a good deal of bit of time of seeing all the events play out from different angles and perspectives, and to try to put it all together. And then the last few chapters are spent kind of giving you answers and wrapping things up. But this game is really weird, though, in that, like, the way it introduces itself is, to me, was the most off-putting and boring crappy crap imaginable, and that it's just the first 4 hours of this game are literally just the most boring milquetoast Yuri love square, I guess you would call it.
I don't think Muv Love's for you, Polly.
No, it's not. No, I have no interest in Muv Love whatsoever. That is just no. That's too much. I liked Rumbling Hearts. I watched that anime, and I'll probably read the VN for it sometime. But I'm staying far the fuck away from Muv Love and all of that that entails.
I was thinking about that one the other day. Imagine getting like two games deep and being like, "This will probably pay off eventually." I'm sure. I'll like
one. So, God, and I guess. Like, so you get that Yuri visual novel story, and there's some kind of weird thing that happens at the end, and you're just like, okay, that was weird, but it took you 4 hours to get here, and I'm still almost tuned out of your game. And then the first chapter is kind of a detective story that follows that same, almost that same exact storyline, but the main character whose head you're in is now aware that something is weird and that she's looping again. And that, you know, so she's trying to play detective, but you spend another 4 hours literally getting no answers at all, and only more questions. And that's sort of like one of my big problems with this game's like overall writing style that never clicked for me, is that it seems like it really just kind of wants to hold on to all of its secrets because it's secret. I'm precious. I thought it of it. I don't want to tell you yet. So it kind of hems and haws at getting to where it's going, and it spends a long time doing it.
Oh, we love when I thought we loved when our fans do that, and that's like our favorite thing.
There's
when they hold a grudge really, really close to our chest.
There's a limit.
There's a limit. There's maybe a limit where you can get a little too far on that.
Yeah. So when the story kicks up from there, you know. It still kind of takes its sweet time getting where it's going. There's a lot of psychological stuff going on with all of these characters, which does make them interesting studies. And it makes their stories compelling. It's just there's something about this game's pacing and the way that it is written that just kind of had me feeling like the answers were really never worth the wait. I think the ultimate reveal and like what the game is doing with its mystery and, like, you know, like, when you understand what's actually happening with these characters, I think that those reveals are all right. It's just, like, the way that it's written kind of just drags it down for me because everything is just so slow and belabored and just, like, it really loves throwing a lot of philosophical and existential concepts at you as conversations between characters, but it really just feels like somebody is just verbatim quoting literature at me. And like, if you go, if you do some reading or you read anything online or you have fans talking about, oh, here's all of these philosophical books you should probably read before playing the visual novel. It's like, dude, get out of here. Like,
is that required reading meme?
Yeah, it's so just like it's so exhausting because they repeat these things ad nauseum. Like, they keep going over these same concepts over and over and over. So you see the same text beaten into your head over and over and over. And it's just like, man, you can get to it. You can just tell me the answer, you know. You don't need to repeat the philosophical thing from just another perspective. You're just saying the same thing you just like saying it because you think it makes the script sound smarter, when it could really have just been excised and we could have shored this up a little bit and it would have been a little more, because 2236 AD does this a lot too, where it is a game that is very much into the writer's very specific interests in philosophy and science and math. But it's not drawn out to the, like, you know, like, there are times where I would spend an hour just reading, repeating text boxes of the same thing over and over, and it's just the same philosophical concepts over and over. It's like, dude, I get it, okay? I promise you, I get it. I guess I'm just hard-pressed for thoughts on this game because, like, even when I finished it, I just it just didn't leave me feeling much of anything toward it. I don't think it's bad. I when it was doing the things that I liked, and I think it did those things well. But for me, the writing style, which again, heavily reliant on a lot of philosophical and existential concepts that the game, I guess, just wants you to go read fucking all of these philosophical texts so you can appreciate how wonderful it is. It just kind of didn't land for me. And I also think that a lot of, like, the extreme content that this VN has with the violence and the sex, it's meant to be impactful, but sort of around the 3/4 mark, it was just like, this isn't really impactful anymore. It's just kind of drawn out, and I'm kind of bored, and it's also just like, it starts kind of feeling, like, cartoonishly evil in an edgy teenager kind of way. And it just kind of, I don't know. Like, I wasn't, and none of it is good because it's visual novel sex scenes, and those are never good. There are so precious few that are actually good. So, I mean, Wonderful Every Day just kind of, it didn't leave me feeling a whole lot.
It kind of did not hit the way you wanted it.
No, like, I get why people that like it. I understand why it may hit for others, but for where I am in my VN journey at this point, I feel like I've just kind of read works that are probably doing similar things or attacking similar concepts with probably better characters and writing that's more palatable to what I would want to read. But, like, there were just parts of this game that was just, like, I felt like I was trying to read over speed bumps or something that was just... Oh, man, why is this just so hard to read? And I don't mean from a content standpoint. I mean from a I don't like the way this is written standpoint.
You're not down and you're not opposed to, like, things that are a little bit obtuse, a little bit, like, slow. Like, no. You read Seabed. You talked about 22-something-something AD. But it sounds like you sometimes that is just kind of there to mask. Like, I'm not saying, like, this is the case, but, like, sometimes that can just kind of mask an underlying lack of substance, or at least substance to match, like, the amount of time it's fucking taking.
This is a very simple story with a very simple message that is literally, like, written in the title of the game. Like, it's all the game's trying to tell you in the end. So, yeah, like, it just kind of, for me, it spent, like, 40 hours kind of just going nowhere.
40 hours.
Not really nowhere. I won't say that it went nowhere. It went somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's just when we got there, I was just like, yeah, okay, can I go home now?
Maybe a better first VN than 100th VN.
I think that is another thing that I noticed a lot when I started checking other opinions on this game, is that this game was a lot of people's first visual novel. So their love for it, your first visual novel, the one that hits you, that's going to be like your...
going to hit like nothing else.
Yeah, yeah. Like, for me, Narcissu is a... That one is imprinted upon me. It is the very reason I've made visual novels. So... You know, like, so I get it. I understand, you know, it's just like, and almost annoyingly so, Umineko being some people's first VN.
Yeah,
I was going to say,
yeah, kind of mine, if you don't count, like,
I know we pick on Umineko a lot, and I know that there are people, like,
it's on the bingo card.
I know at least two or three people right now going through Umineko their first time, and they seem to be having an okay time, so I don't want to sit here and on it. We'll pull back on that.
I mean, my big one is obviously Fate, because I played that
Right
after getting divorced.
Right?
Yeah. Which is basically, you know, a new person at that point.
Yeah. I am reborn.
Yeah. I am reborn.
You are reborn. This is the new era of John. Kind of started with
new
Fate.
Era of John. I braid Fate. Oh, this is my being for a little while.
I've made a promise to myself to take that journey again myself, though, to actually do Fate again sometime. I just kind of want to get Witch on the Holy Night out of the way first. I think there's something there that I really like there that feels like maybe it establishes some things that maybe will make parts of Fate kind of read a little easier for me.
Mm-hmm. You have tried Fate in the past and bounced off.
Yeah, I read the Fate route. Yeah, and I was
and
just,
so. Yeah. And you haven't tried Witch on the Holy Night.
Not yet.
I feel like get one down that is like one story instead of three stories, and it hits you good all the way through. Like that would be a much stronger foundation for going into a big stupid epic like Fate.
Yeah, like that's exactly my thoughts. So I have Fate installed. I have Witch on the Holy Night installed.
I'm glad you found it.
I mean, I have it on Steam as well. I have the remake version that they did, but I kind of want to take this one on the way it was intended. Originally, so
with the mirror moon patch, as Nasu and God intended, you're supposed to play it with the mirror moon fan translation. That's in present tense.
Yep. So,
putting a fucking visual novel in past tense. Come on.
I've never done that.
I don't actually remember what all the tenses are. I just remember once, like, here, look how much better the new Fate translation is, and it's like, oh, you put it in past tense and you use more words.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And everyone was like flatly like, oh, this is so much better.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm like, no, it's not. I mean, it looks fine. I'm not sure it's strictly an upgrade.
Like when I write the end stuff, I do tend to kind of lean more toward past tense.
Past tense is perfectly good and like probably the better way of going about it. It's just that for me, I definitely associate certain strains of like the protagonist's brain is disintegrating.
Yes.
Under the course of like magic powers. I associate that with
and you cannot do that very well in a past tense. I think that hits a hell of a lot harder from other tenses. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, while Wonderful Every Day didn't really kind of leave me feeling a whole lot, I'll tell you, though, I did play something that left me feeling a little something.
Ooh.
Left me feeling, I don't know, maybe a little groovy?
Pissed off. What were they thinking?
Nice. Nice. Left me pissed off.
No.
Just yelled right over my joke.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was your joke, Colin?
I played Rhythm Heaven Groove.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yay. All right. Good video game.
Good video game. I played a good one. Yeah, like cuz I played I think I played Bips and Bops last time. I think that
kept
was
the rhythm train going.
Yeah. Yeah, cuz I knew that cuz this was coming out a couple weeks later. So yeah. So Rhythm Heaven Groove finally came out for the Nintendo Switch.
Oh, what's the Japanese subtitle again?
Rhythm Tengo. Oh, God. It's like Miracle Wonderful or something like that.
Stardust Memories. It's something.
Something like that.
Much more flourishy than Groove.
Yeah, and they just gave us Groove. Miracle Stars, I think it's called.
Okay, yeah.
But Rhythm Heaven is just kind of like, I mean, just as a base thing, it's one of my favorite things ever. Just as a thing, it's simple, it's full of joy, it's full of weirdness, great music. Like, I consider it a kind, yeah, I guess I would, I think that I would call like Rhythm Heaven kind of a perfect thing that just like, I'm always gonna love this. I guess the funny thing with Rhythm Heaven Groove right now is it's honestly kind of wild that a game that's packed with like this much joy and positive energy is releasing in the gaming climate we have right now.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it's only $40 and on a physical cartridge.
Wow. Nintendo doing everything right for once.
Let's not give them any credit. Like that's the thing I need people to stop doing is saying we need to give it to Nintendo for not. No, we absolutely under no circumstance need to give it to Nintendo. They literally have a guy working slave labor for the rest of his life because he pirated a video game. No, fuck off. Nintendo is evil.
It's just that they're not as evil as the other two right now.
Yeah, like the other ones are like shooting themselves in the dick repeatedly, and just expecting
or just
us
firing all of their employees.
They're expecting us to be really amazed at how good they are at shooting their own dick off. But you know, Nintendo is just kind of. I'm just convinced they're waiting. They're just like, all right, man, everybody else is fucking up real
they
bad.
They can just win by doing nothing right now. They can, Luigi they in
can,
the corner.
They can literally Luigi did nothing and won. So let's talk specifically about Rhythm Heaven Groove. And I don't really know what to say about that because at the end of the day, Rhythm Heaven is just going to kind of Rhythm Heaven, isn't it?
I will say, you can talk to about any minigame, and I'll know what you're talking about because I've watched a lot of streams of this.
Rhett?
Every VTuber is playing I was going to say,
Rhett, were you watching VTubers play Rhythm Heaven Groove?
I showed you the streams. I know. Everyone is playing
but
it.
But it's a bit, Rhett. We established the bit earlier, been a callback. I swear, these co-hosts exist today to just ruin all of my jokes. So Rhythm Heaven, it literally is the same formula that it's been since the Game Boy Advance. It's simple little rhythm mini games where you usually press one or two buttons, and every song or mini game has a few different rhythmic cues that you need to learn and then do them throughout a full song while fun and cute things happen on screen. I think that Groove's difficulty is pretty much mostly in line with the rest of the series. Like, you typically learn like two or three cues or patterns or something, and then you just play that throughout the song, and then you get your medals and your perfects. I think that the actual patterns that are used in the songs in this one do like to get a little trickier and throw curveballs at you a little more. Or they'll like switch up the cue between an upbeat and a downbeat a little bit. And they'll do that a little more often, or they'll do something like lock. Like I was happy that there was a lockstep reference with a new mini game here, because lockstep is one of my favorites from the DS version. And that's one where you're constantly going from having to like tap a constant rhythm to then jump to the upbeat. And back and forth. So I was glad they kind of are doing more of that. So I have a lot of fun playing this one because I think that this one is it's tripped me up a little more than previous games because like I was not expecting you to throw that cue at me on the up. Oop, scramble, miss it. overall, I think the mini games themselves are again pretty much what you've come to expect. There's silly premises and cute little characters. Like,
there's a robot catching pudding.
There's some.
But he has to laser bad pudding.
Yes, you have to laser. They're so absurd. The premises are so absurd. It's like, I don't know how you thought of that. That's so weird. So for the most part, I think like a lot of the mini games, I think the mini games are maybe a little more toned down, but I'll hit that here in maybe a bit, but, there's co-op games this time around that I completed all by myself because I have no friends.
Nice.
And
do you have to use two Joy-Cons?
Yes. And that presents like a whole different, very funny and hilarious new challenging way to play the game, because like once you get past like the first two co-op minigames, which are just alternating, the next ones after that are all four players, and you can play two players, and then the CPU plays the other two.
Okay.
And the fun part about that is that every time you play the game, your position on the beat changes. So you can end up having to do like, okay, player one is on 1 and 3 this time. Uh-oh. Oh, it's 2 and 3 or 1 and 4 or 3 and 4. So it's different every time you play it. So I had to like, that was a whole evening of me doing all of the co-op mini games by myself, like having to switch around my Joy-Cons because they're not in the same place. Or I was like, no, I need you to be over here because you're a 1 and I'm on 3 this time. Oh, shit. But they bring back some cute references to older Rhythm Heaven games in that, like the one where you were like samurai and you've got to protect the emperor from arrows being shot in rhythm, and the rhythm is in that one get absolutely insane. So I try and have to figure out like what I've got to do on one, and then what I've got to do on four. It's like shit. But they give you like a health bar and stuff, so that you can. You don't just like lose it in one, and like the simpler ones are just like the ones where you alternate, like one player like does it once and then you'll move on to the next pattern and then that player will do that pattern, but if one player fails the pattern you get a second chance with the other player to try and nail the pattern and then you continue on. So that stuff's really well done. I wonder how that would like feel with actually like having four people, but I have no friends, so I'll never know what that feels like. There's also a very cool new just entire mode to play in. That's a cute little simplified RPG game called Beat Spell, where you cast spells with button inputs to the rhythm, and if you put them in perfectly, you do critical damage, and that has its own fun and interesting little twists on the Rhythm Heaven formula overall. Like it's like one of the only times you'll see like Rhythm Heaven where it'll like have a grid or something on screen where you're trying to like, you know, follow a pattern, because this is not a game that uses like on-screen cues or anything, or like you know, note charts or anything like that. But it's like you've got a diamond in the middle of the, like up by your character, and you've got your list of spells on like what the pattern is for it. So it'd be like, you know, like A right, and then that casts fire or something like that, and then you just keep doing that over and over and over. And there's like the enemies will attack you, which you can't really do anything about, so you've got a healing spell where you've got to kind of balance healing and attacking at the same time. It's very much like it's kind of reminded me of Polyclicker in a way.
I can kind of see that.
So it's got that kind of thing where you can't really mitigate damage, but you can heal it off. Like, and if you if you heal it with like perfect timing, you'll have to heal less because you'll get more HP back for doing it on for being right on beat. I think that like you cannot really find fault at all in what you get for $40 in this game. Like it's just packed full of stuff. Like there's so many like I thought it was actually going to be a much shorter game because they had packed in like all of the extra like multiplayer stuff. I was like, "Oh, well we don't have to do as many normal, one player stuff. You know, we can, call that the full package." But no, they didn't do that. Like, it is a very full-ass Rhythm Heaven game where you get credits, and then there's another couple of worlds where you get, harder versions of older games to play, and then a big-ass final remix to finish it out. And, again, satisfying in all the same ways that all of those other Rhythm Heaven games are. That said, I don't know whether it's like a budget thing or not, but there definitely feels like there's less going on visually. And this game does kind of feel like it's lacking a lot of the same memorable characters and scenario ideas of some previous games. And the thing that really does stand out the most is that the remixes all largely use the same art from the original mini games now, rather than each remix kind of having its own unique visual theming. And I really miss that because, I mean, Fever really had some amazing, like, complete, like, visual reworks of games that you've already done in this in this new consistent theme. And, like, it just kind of felt like a little bit of the charm being pulled out. And again, I don't know whether it's because of budgetary concern, because it's a $40 game and it's not like, the last time they released a completely new Rhythm Heaven game was literally like, 2011? So,
yeah.
And sometimes I think that like, it's either they had a budget, either they had a smaller budget, or sometimes I think like, and maybe it's just me that feels this way, but I feel like some modern Nintendo games end up going through some kind of like defunification filter where all where like all the weird charm gets pulled out of it a little bit, so things could feel a little more sterile and safe.
Paper Mario definitely got hit with that extremely hard with the whole like we don't let you use OCs anymore.
Yeah.
Which was like the whole fucking thing.
Yeah. And like just like things that bothered me like when I was playing the Super Mario RPG remake and it's like these are just mobile game menus. Like go back and look at that original UI from the SNES version. It's charming. It's got this cute little kind of crayon-y aesthetic to it. It just like that fits, whereas like the remake is just like, wow, I sure do look like a mobile game. And it just
didn't. I feel like menus in particular are something that everyone struggles with and nobody does like in-universe looking stuff anymore.
Like even Rhythm Heaven, like even its main menu like is just very sterile and just like man, like there's no character here. I do like that the game has a cute little, like, it's got a cute little robot mascot girl, and she actually like does that text to speech stuff that I think they're doing in Tomodachi Life, where she'll like read any on screen text to you, and like when the game starts up, you get the option of her reading like just spoken text or full descriptions of everything, or you can turn her off. But if you turn her off, she just kind of puts her head down and seems real sad. So I left it on. I'm not immune to sad robot girls. But, I mean, other than that, dude, it is another blissfully delightful and comfortable Rhythm Heaven game. It's easy to pick up and hard to want to put down. Like, I've just had a blast with it the whole time. It's just been, like, that bit of joy that I think I need in the world right now when everything else is kind of falling apart. It's kind of nice that Rhythm Heaven is there to just be this joyous little thing.
In our darkest moments, returned.
In our darkest moments, it returned. God damn it.
You mentioned last time about Bits and Bops, how some of the games used visual cues.
Yeah.
And you didn't like that. So this game's very strange, I found, because the whole thing is audio-based. You can just play it without looking. Except for one minigame.
Which one?
The lightning
strike. Oh, yeah.
When it does the multiples in a row and it just puts the number on screen and the robot girl will read it if you have it.
Yeah.
It's the one time. It's so weird. Like, the whole text-to-speech thing seems to be there to justify that.
I do think that there are a couple of minigames that maybe aren't quite as put together, or the audio cues aren't quite as dialed in as I'd want them to be, too. But again, like, it's a game that's got, like, 80-some rhythm games on it to play. So it's just like, you know what, if you kind of just weren't able to figure something out for one or two of them, which again, like, I've not really had any issues clearing or meddling or even perfecting any of anything that's thrown at me, because I'm just a fucking god, basically.
Fucking god gamer.
There you go.
Did you know there's new levels of perfect?
What?
there's triple perfect now.
How have I not run into this yet?
Have you perfected the same level 3 times in a row?
I didn't know that was a thing.
Apparently that's a thing now.
Because in Rhythm Heaven Fever and all the games previous, you perfect it, and then the game just like, you know, 5 or 10 games later or something, it'll throw, hey, go get a perfect on the golf game. And then you just do it and it never shows up again. I'm not aware of triple perfects.
I've heard there's triple perfect in this.
That's insane. I think
they said, okay, we're making you play this one forever.
I mean, it's fine. Like, I like playing these games, and like, even like when I'm making my way through the main campaign, I'd sometimes just go, ah, man, I just really like the fucking silly car game. I'll play that again.
The car one is really cute.
It's really cute. I like Sneezy Moon too, but I think people really don't.
Oh my god. That's the one where when I see people playing it, I cannot figure out when they're hitting the button.
It's on the upbeat. It's on an upbeat.
I knew it was on. I could tell it wasn't on the beat. It's just like, what the fuck is going on here? Everyone seems to struggle with that one.
Yeah, because he'll go, eh, 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 ka. Yeah, it's real fun. I love that one so much.
And then it starts going very fast.
And then it goes, eh, ka, eh. And then he'll fake you out once and not sneeze at all. That's really funny, because he'll do like the first part of the sneeze, and you think that he's just like, oh, he's gonna do the one where he skips the second beat and then does the third and fourth. No, he just doesn't sneeze at all.
How did they think of that one? Oh, it's the moon and sneezing constantly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's silly.
It's so weird, these minigames.
Yeah, yeah. So Rhythm Heaven, man, it's always a delight. I'm always going to be happy to have more. It's just kind of brought a big smile to my face. I'm happy it exists, like I said. I wish the remixes were more themed. But I still think, like, I think a lot of people have, I've heard a lot of complaints that, like, the music isn't as good either. And I think that there are a couple of things where I can agree with that, where a couple of songs do just kind of say, it's just kind of, you know, there's nothing really stands out about it. It's just kind of an electronic thing you're doing there. It's all right. But I can still think of a lot of songs already that I've played where it's like, no, that's a cute song. I can remember it gets stuck in my head. So, yeah. Love me some Rhythm Heaven. Like, if you like any,
awesome.
If you want to have a good time and you want to smile a lot, I think you just play a Rhythm Heaven game, because you will. You'll enjoy it. I think these games are really good at teaching rhythm as well. I think that they're patient enough and gentle enough to kind of help you get it. And this game also has, because I've played it on a number of TVs now, and I've, like, it's been pretty good about, like, with input delay and stuff, and, like, when you have it docked and undocked, it'll actually tell you that it's like, hey, you know, you don't got to worry about input delay if you're, you know, undocked. And then, like, when you dock it, the little robot girl comes like, hey, do you want to make sure your input delay is all right? And then that's all you got to do is just, like, you know, they give you a little count to, like, count to four on a beat, and then you
gotcha.
And then, you know, and then it seems to do a really good job of picking up no matter, like, what latency your TV might have, because there's no actual offset option that a lot of these games have where you can just kind of set the offset yourself.
Interesting.
So yeah, like, I've played it on,
I've got a we have a GBA flash cart now, so I'm probably gonna, I want to play OG Rhythm Heaven on a DS. I think that'll probably run real nice.
OG Rhythm Heaven, I will say, it does have some games where you're gonna have to know some Japanese, because, like, there's especially one where, like, with, like, a drill sergeant that's literally in the first level where you're gonna have to understand the difference between right and left, and because they call it out.
I'll be okay.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Like, look, it's still Rhythm Heaven, and it's still simple at the end of the day, so there's nothing that's going to be too bad. But yeah, like, Rhythm, like, I like the first Rhythm Heaven as well. I think that one kind of, like, gets ranked considerably lower than the others when I talk to other people about it, but I really liked it. So, yeah. Play some Rhythm Heaven, man. Enjoy it. Have a good time. Smile a little bit.
Play some Rhythm Heaven.
Hell yeah. Be a karate man. Punch some ramen bowls.
Let's go read a bunch of books.
Oh, God. Love cheer readers so much. All right. So.
Yeah, it did feel like Rhythm Heaven, the previous game, had more real iconic ones like the cheer readers or
Ringside. Yeah.
But I'm warming up to the new ones as well.
Yeah. Have you played it yet? Or are you going to get it at all?
I'm not going to play it at all. I've watched like 10 streams of it.
That's sad. Everybody should play more Rhythm Heaven.
Also, for some reason, Remix 8 is by the singer Ado.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But she's huge in Japan, so it's weird to see Nintendo get, like, a name.
A big name like that, yeah. That's,
like,
pretty cool.
I saw it on YouTube, and it had, like, a million views on, like, the first day. I'm like, oh, shit. She's in Rhythm Heaven?
That's awesome.
That's why it sold, like, 300,000.
That's fucking why their budget got... all their budget went to pay her.
I hope not too.
I hope that this game did sell like 350,000 copies in its first week in Japan, though, which is the biggest showing for the series, so hopefully that shows there's more interest in, like, cool weird little things like this.
Imagine this is the Fire Emblem Awakening moment of, like, we're gonna make one last one of these and then be done, and then
It's also Tsunku's comeback game, because he had had to step away from game development for a while because he had throat cancer, and he had his vocal cords removed. So, you know, this is kind of like a celebration of him coming back, and you know,
really nice.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So, miracle stars indeed. So nice. That, I do believe, is going to put the cap on another fine little show. I think we pulled through just fine. We said at the start, like, things were kind of rough going at start. We were all kind of feeling a little when we started out, but we got there once the good vibes start flowing. So you can always count on that. So John, before we go, where can the fine folks at home find you on their internet hole?
farawaytimes.com.
And Rhett.
I guess it's rhett.bsky.social, barely.
Yeah, barely.
Once in a while.
Once in a while. He'll sad post every now and again.
Oh, God.
And you can find me somewhere. I'm on my website. I ain't that hard to
if
find.
If you found the podcast,
you found the podcast, you're probably good. So until next time, I want you to remember two things. One, Jonathan Blow is a fucking cuck. And two, we are the podcast that loves you. We are the only ones that love you. Mitch McConnell is dead.